Falcons fans, welcome back to another edition of the FalconCast podcast here on AtlantaFalcons.com. Joining me once again, Daniel Cox.
Yes, hello.
And I am Jay Adams. We've got a really good treat today. Last week we had Coy Wire on giving us some of his thoughts on the Falcons and the draft. And this week we're lucky enough to be joined by ESPN.com NFC South blogger Pat Jasinskas. Pat, how are you?
I'm doing very well, and I am a little worried that I've got to follow Coy Wire's act because he's pretty pretty good at this kind of stuff, so that's a tough act to follow.
He's a rising star, Pat. He's going to take off, I think.
He's a good guy, and he's a Pennsylvania guy just like I am.
Oh, that's right. Yep, that's right. All right, let's jump right into it with the report yesterday. Ed Werder from ESPN reporting that Tony Gonzalez – wavering was the word that he used, beginning to waver on potentially retiring. We all know that he had the 95 and 5% split between what he was going to do after this season. While we wait for Tony to make his decision, Pat, what do you think about that report that came out, and how do you think Tony's kind of ambiguous nature about what he's going to do is going to affect the Falcons here in what are a couple of crucial months?
Well, I think he truly is wavering. I have no doubt that report is accurate. And going back even a little further, a little over 2 weeks ago, the Friday before the Super Bowl, when Thomas Dimitroff was making the rounds of Radio Row in New Orleans, I had a chance to sit down with him, and he told me then that the Falcons were lobbying Tony very hard to come back for one more season, that they felt there was still high-octane fuel in the tank and that they wanted him back, and they had let him know that. So I think that's only continued. I think, Thomas Dimitroff and Mike Smith have let him know. I think some of his teammates, particularly Matt Ryan, have been lobbying him as well. And we know from past experience that Tony has talked retirement in the past and then ultimately decided to come back. So I think there is a decent chance that he does come back, and I think that Tony's a veteran and a pro. He's been around. He knows he can't tie the Falcons up forever. There is no hard deadline according to Thomas Dimitroff, but the soft deadline would obviously be March 12th. That's the start of the league year. That's when free agency starts, and they probably need to know by that point whether Tony's going to play or not. So I would anticipate something in the next couple of weeks.
Hey, Pat, regardless of Tony's decision, to come back or not, can you see a scenario where the Falcons head into the draft knowing Tony's decision maybe to come back, for instance? Do you feel like a tight end would still be a target there, with kind of the one-year window of Tony's return? And do you think that a guy, a young tight end that can come in, like a first-round guy or a super talented guy, and can kind of take advantage of the existing relationship that Matt's kind of created with the tight end position, specifically Tony, obviously, but the tight end position in general? I mean, he threw a number of touchdowns to a number of tight ends this season, not just Tony, out of that position. Do you think a talented young guy can come in and kind of begin to step into that role immediately?
Yeah, I think that the guy that I met with earlier this week down at IMG Academy in Bradenton, Tyler Eifert out of Notre Dame, would be a perfect fit for the Falcons, and everybody's projecting him as a late first-round pick. And with or without Tony, even if Tony is back, I could still see the Falcons going ahead and drafting him there, because they do need a long-term solution at that position. And if you brought him in and let him be Tony's understudy for a year, that would be great for him. But if Tony does retire, I think Tyler Eifert is the kind of guy that could step in and contribute right away. He might not quite beat Tony Gonzalez right off the bat, but I think he could produce at a pretty high level. And I think that would be important, because if Tony Gonzalez does walk away, the Falcons rely so much on their tight end. It's such a big part of their offense that if they don't have a great pass-catching tight end, they're going to have to change their offense dramatically, put more on the third receiver, more on the running backs. So I think it's very important to get a tight end, whether it's, to to spend a year with Tony or whether to step right in and play immediately.
So you mentioned you were down at IMG Academy in Florida and around some players who were getting ready for the draft. Who are some other guys that maybe you talked to or saw down there, or just guys in general that you're keeping your eye on, especially this week at the Combine, for who the Falcons could be in the market for?
Well, two in particular that I think are pretty good fits for the Falcons. Marcus Hunt, the defensive end out of SMU. He's a unique guy with a unique story. He's from Estonia. He never played football until he got to SMU. He came to SMU as a track guy, as a shot put and discus guy. But the SMU had dropped its track team, and he wound up trying out for football, and it worked out pretty well for him. And this guy is an incredible physical specimen. He's about 6'8 and 277, very good athletic ability, not real polished, but has tremendous upside. And we all know the Falcons need to enhance their pass rush a little bit and get an eventual successor for John Abraham. So he's a guy that I could see potentially going to them late in the first round. And then the other guy that I talked to down at IMG was the running back from Wisconsin, Monte Ball. He is the guy that's being talked about as more like a third-round pick. And I could see the Falcons making a move on him because I think running back is a position you can get a quality guy in the third or fourth round and get a guy that can help you right away. And Monte is a guy that does everything well. Maybe is not off the charts in any one area. The speed is average, the size is average, but he's just very consistent, has produced at a very high level and against good competition. And I think that he's a guy that the Falcons certainly could look at in the middle rounds.
You know, Pat, the Combine gets going, cranked up this week. As you sit down in your off season to kind of think about how you cover teams, specifically heading into the draft, how do you think about or how do you examine the draft in relation to, the players that maybe you think you're going to consider going to, the Falcons, for instance? And, you've mentioned a couple of those guys. Is it just a strictly knees-based thing, or do you consider other elements? And, what are some of the scenarios that you see playing out for the Falcons, not just in the first round, but maybe some of the middle and later rounds where Thomas Dimitroff's been had some success there?
The first thing with the Falcons, we're not going to know everything about what they're going to need out of this draft for a few more weeks. We need to see what happens with their own free agents. And I'm talking about guys like Sam Baker, Brent Grimes, William Moore. Whether or not they re-sign them could change the draft plans dramatically. If Brent Grimes suddenly leaves, they need to go out and sign a corner. If Sam Baker leaves, they need a left tackle. So those are going to influence what they do overall, at the top of the draft, I think, pretty dramatically. But as it gets further into the draft, Thomas, a lot of general managers talk about how they like to go with the best available player. But when push comes to shove, it's usually a player that fills a need. But Thomas is a little different in that regard. He will take a best available player later in the draft, and he'll look down the road. It might not be a guy that is going to contribute right away, but a guy that they can develop for a year or two. Kind of like they've done with Cliff Matthews, a guy that I think going forward could take on a bigger role. He was a late round draft pick, so I think that Thomas, certainly keeps his eyes open, which is more than can be said for a lot of general managers.
Well, let's switch gears here a little bit, and I want to talk a little bit about the NFC South. This is the division that you cover. Nobody knows it like you. I think, and this is just me completely opining here, but I think that this division is one of the better divisions in football, and I think it's just going to continue to get more competitive here as the years go on. You've got four very good organizations. I want to know what you think the outlook is for the division. Going into 2013, you've got the Falcons coming off a great year. You've got Sean Payton coming back to the Saints. How does that change the dynamic of what we saw, you know, say compared to 2012? What can we expect to see out of this division in 2013?
Well, I think it'll get back to how it had been in the last few previous years before 2012. The Falcons kind of ran away with it in 2012. The Saints kind of fell off from their normal pace, and the Panthers and Buccaneers were, you know, both 7-9 teams. And I think both of those teams are teams with upside, with good young quarterbacks, Josh Freeman and Cam Newton, that should only get better. So I think those teams are very close to being contenders, and I think the return of Sean Payton makes the Saints contenders right off the bat again. They've obviously got some work to do on their defense, but, you know, this has been a division that, since I've been doing it since 2008, it's been a very competitive division. I like to say it's the best division in football. I might be a little biased on that one, but I think it truly is, and I think that 2013 is going to be another, you know, very competitive, very intense NFC South season.
Yeah. Speaking of 2013, the Falcons last season, like you said, you know, they ran away with the division. You've written over the year about the maturity of the Falcons, and you know, you spent quite a bit of time at some of the Falcons games on Sundays during the season. Can you talk about that maturity and how you see the experience of, you know, some guys like Thomas Dekou, for example, some of these players that, you know, had the kind of season they had and gained that maturity. And these are guys that have still been here since 2008. But, you know, that was, I think last season was a little bit different season for all of them for the most part. How do you see the experience from last season playing out for the guys on the roster moving into next season?
I think you saw some of those guys, like you mentioned, Thomas Dekou. I throw Sean Weatherspoon in there as well, Julio Jones. I think, you know, those are some of the younger guys that are getting more comfortable now and taking on more leadership roles, and I think that's a wonderful thing because there are some veteran leaders there already, but getting some of these guys more ingrained into leadership roles can only help. And even though things ended badly with the loss in the NFC Championship game, I think winning that playoff game against Seattle was hugely important for the future of the Falcons.
Wrap it up with you. Thank you so much for joining us today. It was a real treat to have you on, and maybe we can catch up with you right before the draft.
Anytime, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Well, Daniel, that was awesome to have Pat on. We see Pat all the time.
Yes.
We really respect his opinion. Great guy, too. Really has his finger on the pulse of what's going on in the NFC South.
Absolutely. It's always nice when he comes to visit us.
Absolutely. All right, so let's get to our... We've got a name for this
Falcon
segment.
Splash.
Yeah, there it is. That's the theme song. So we're going to call it Falcons Flash, I guess, and instead of the most interesting thing we've seen all week.
Yeah,
which I think it's a snappy title. It's got the alliteration. I think it's got everything it needs to be a title for this segment. So I think you did an outstanding job.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you.
On
that. I'm just thinking a little bit ahead to later today when I'll be flashing across the...
Oh, here we go. We mentioned hey,
practice field.
All right, so we talked about it last week.
Right.
Coy Wire made us talk about it.
Yes.
We're running the 40 today.
Yes, we are.
And the video will be on the site, looks like Friday.
Yes.
So you can see Daniel and I, actually, right after we finish this recording.
Yes,
we are going to go down and limber up.
And Jay.
And we are going to run that 40.
You're going to be disappointed by some of the response from Twitter.
Disappointed in usually disappointed by some of the responses.
No, that's not true. We solicited fans to share their predicted 40 times for you and myself, and most of them are reasonable.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, Jay. I don't remember what I ran last year. I know you do.
You ran a 5.9.
Okay.
I ran a 6.2.
Then people are being very generous for the most part.
Yeah.
However, there are a few that are completely like, you have 13 seconds, Jay, and I have 12.
Oh, wow.
There was another one that was 16 seconds. This is ridiculous. It's just 40 yards, which is 120 feet. I know this because I have fashioned a 40-yard dash exercise area.
There's some that I'm looking at them right now in my mentions on Twitter, and there's some that could be pretty close. I'm going to say, all right.
Okay.
Since last year when we did this, I've trimmed down a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been working out.
Absolutely.
I've been getting after it. I mean, I'm not working on like speed and agility.
Right.
You know, just more or less trying to stay on a cardio machine without trying to, you know, jump off of it after 30 minutes.
Right.
But who knows what that could be the wild card this year. You don't know. And that's what I like is that
there is an unknown factor to this.
I am a little bit of an unknown this year.
Okay.
Even I don't know. And if I don't know, you can't know.
Yeah. This all I know is I've been stretching for the last 24 hours.
Okay. For the last 24 hours. I thought when I came in here and you're doing hamstring stretches and exercises.
Yeah. I walked down the hall doing that.
Yep.
You know, the leg stretches. So.
Right. Kicking your hands and everything.
Yep. Yeah. So I'm about ready for
this. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. Anyway,
Falcons
we
Flash.
We take that path to get back to Falcons Flash. Falcons Flash is going to be, we're just going to share the most interesting thing we have seen all week concerning
Falcons
the Falcons
related
and the
on
NFL.
The internet.
Yeah.
Needs to be,
on the webs. Yeah.
Harlem Shake is going to get up there.
Yeah. You've got a pretty good one. Why don't you why don't you lead it off here?
Absolutely. This came from Pro Football Talk. It came out today. It has nothing. It's indirectly related to the Falcons. It's about the former LSU cornerback kick returner Tyrann Mathieu, and he's preparing for the combine with a former LSU cornerback and a current Cardinals quarterback Patrick Peterson. It was a first-round draft pick. I think it was third or fourth overall a couple of seasons ago. And one of the things he's doing is working with Mathieu on the physicality of the game, especially as a corner, as a secondary member, a member of the secondary. And Patrick Peterson's father is also involved, and he's got a lot of experience with this. But the most interesting thing that I thought that came out of this was a quote from Patrick Peterson Sr. He says, and he's discussing why they're kind of taking this physical approach with Mathieu as they get ready for the combine and hopefully, you know, an NFL career for Mathieu. He said, NFL wide receivers are a whole other animal with Julio and Megatron. He's a small guy already, and they're going to want to take advantage of his size, but he's tough, a tough guy to muscle because he's pretty strong himself. Obviously, the key there is the mention of Julio. Julio Jones, Falcons wide receiver, as well as Calvin Johnson, Detroit Lions wide receiver. What's interesting to me is this is the second or third time I've kind of seen this in the offseason, in the past week or so even, is this mention of Julio and Calvin Johnson as these two wide receivers that are kind of all world. They're kind of changing the game a little bit. And basically when we're mentioning the NFL, if there's a prototype wide receiver in the NFL, Julio and Calvin Johnson are being mentioned. We mentioned this last week when we were talking with Coy, as we talked about, you know, how offenses are changing and how, you know, maybe cornerbacks on defense need to kind of grow up, so to speak, to kind of combat that. But I think it's a great thing about Julio. I think that it shows that the season that Julio had demonstrates that, you know, he's one of those guys that's quickly becoming, you know, a guy that we're going to talk about as arguably one or two, you know, best wide receivers in the NFL. And I thought it was awesome that Julio is one of the guys that was mentioned in that that physicality conversation and in terms of helping a guy translate to the NFL.
I like it.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I can't think of any NFL team that wouldn't want that prototype on their team.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's, and you know what, I don't remember if we talked about it on the podcast or not, but it wasn't long ago that Gil Brandt from NFL.com wrote that if he had to choose between Julio and Calvin Johnson, he would choose Julio, which caused quite a stir. And,
yeah.
Because everybody's like, oh, Calvin Johnson. And look, Calvin Johnson is a phenomenal wide receiver. It's just interesting now that we've seen here in 2 years where people have really, really, like you said, just kind of put Julio in that category of that's the guy you want. That's what you want out of a wide receiver.
In just 2 years, yeah. And just to remind you, I was curious, so I put it up real quickly. Julio at the Combine, 2011, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. Is that right? The years they all begin to blur. He was a top performer, 4.39 seconds in the 40.
With a broken foot.
Yeah. 135-inch broad jump.
With a broken foot.
And 11.07 second 60-yard shuttle run.
With a broken foot.
Yeah. So 4.39 is your goal today.
So here's what we're going to do. We're gonna break your foot, and we're going to see how you do and stack you up against Julio's numbers. I like that.
Okay.
I think that's way better than me running.
I thought you were going to say stack it against your numbers, but...
No. We're not going to,
Okay.
Because I'd rather compare you to Julio than you to me. Well.
Yeah, I'll take that comparison.
All right.
So what do you have? What did you find?
All right, so this is another one that came today, and I wrote a little bit about it, and I think it's interesting, simply because it hasn't been a huge part of the game. But I think this may be one of those little things that kind of change things up for some guys.
Okay.
And that is the new equipment rules going into effect where – players are going to be required to wear knee pads and thigh pads.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, if you're at home and maybe you've never played football before and you're like, wow, what difference does that make? It's just pads. Well, there are a lot of guys in the NFL that don't like wearing those pads.
Right.
And it's because it can limit their range of motion. Mm-hmm. It can slow them down a little bit. Kickers especially don't like to have anything cumbersome. You know, look at what Morton Anderson used to wear. I mean, he'd put on he'd put on a shirt and a helmet, something that looked like a helmet with
a helmet
bar
that had a bar
on it.
Across the front,
and that's how he would go out and kick because you don't want all this cumbersome.
It makes sense.
Stuff on you. So, I really wonder. Okay, some of these guys, I'm just going off the top of my head here, but like, I'm pretty sure Roddy White doesn't wear those. I don't know about Julio. I haven't seen. I'm pretty sure like Michael Turner didn't wear them. I know Matt Bryant doesn't wear them. So
even
now
a guy like Matt Ryan. I mean,
right. So now these guys suddenly are going to have to wear this stuff, and there's uniform inspectors.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That are going to check them before the game and halftime, but also during the game. And these inspectors now have the ability to pull them out of the game if they're not complying with the uniform.
Wow.
Here's the quote from Merton Hanks. You remember Merton Hanks.
Yes, I do.
Oh, San Francisco 49ers. You know, he did the neck thing.
Oh, yeah.
Very long neck, him.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Okay so Vice President of Football Operations, Merton Hanks for the NFL, says, we're going to treat this issue much like a player trying to play without his helmet. And Daniel, you know, a player would not play without his helmet.
Yes.
And that's what Hanks goes on to say. No player plays without his helmet. It's just an accepted portion of the uniform. So now these pads are just as important as the helmet. And, you know, we've seen here in recent years that the NFL has made great strides to make the game safer.
Right.
And especially when it comes to concussions and things like that. But I think this is just another step in that direction where, you know, you're making the game safer. It may not be a popular thing, and some of the players may not really like it, but it's just something that's going to make everyone safer. You know, maybe they don't see it now, but maybe 20 years from now when their knees are still intact, you know, who knows? But I wonder how it's going to affect some of the speed for these guys. Does it really limit your range of motion that much that, you know, if you're a wide receiver – you know, and you're trying to make a break or trying to get downfield, does it affect your speed? I think that could be a question that you bring up.
Absolutely. I mean, you think about, you head to the gym, you wear clothes that are appropriate for that, right?
You do.
You know, you don't bulk up, you know, wear a couple pairs of pants.
And a cardigan.
Yeah.
Chucks. I mean,
well,
you don't do that.
Some people might. But
by the way, are you juicing right now? You've got a cup of coffee before we're going to go run.
Performance enhancing.
I can't believe this. This has gone on right under my nose.
PEDs.
I can't believe this.
I'm not sanctioned by anyone, so
that's true.
I can do as I wish.
That's true. Although I did say earlier that the IOC took away the other events. This year, we're just running the 40.
You know what?
Last year, we almost snapped ankles trying to do shuttles and agility.
That doesn't bother me. It's just we ran the 40. After that, my legs were shaking. I could barely stand up. So I was worried about everything else.
Hey, we pour all of our focus,
all of our energy, and desire
to beat one another into one event.
I cannot wait.
One event stands between
two
men.
Right now. It's almost time. We need to get going here pretty soon so we can do this.
We do. All right, well, let's wrap it up. Give here our parting thought. We've got to name five players we're going to closely watch at the Combine.
All right.
Why don't you go with your five?
I will go first. First one is the guy that Pat mentioned, Marcus Hunt, out of SMU, defensive end.
He's the pride of Estonia.
Yeah, yeah. Check this out. I looked it up before the 2012 season. CBSSports.com named him the number one athletic freak in college football.
I mean,
that's awesome.
Wow.
So that's the guy I'm looking for at the combat. I'm just curious to see what he does, and he could be certainly in that range and in the mix for the Falcons. Number two for me, Marcus Lattimore. I've got a good friend that's a big South Carolina Gamecocks fan, and, you know, you can't help but hurt for the guy. And I guess he's not going to compete, but I'm really curious to see how he handles that, the media interaction portion of that and how he discusses it and everything. But I've definitely got my eye on him through the entire offseason draft process. Third for me is Zach Ertz, tight end from Stanford. We wrote about him 2 weeks ago. We talked to Coy Wire last week about him on the podcast. It just seems like one of those guys. He seems like he'd be a good fit for the Falcons in terms of intangibles as well as those on-field characteristics as well, if that's the direction they choose to go. Number four for me is a guy I wrote about last week, Sam Montgomery, defensive end out of LSU. Still not getting a lot of talk, but he's still one of those fringe first-round guys. Big, solid pass rusher. I think he can make an impact. I think he's got a chance to be a really, really solid player. And number five for me, he might be gone by the time the Falcons get to number 30. You know, we'll see. Jesse Williams, defensive tackle from Alabama. 6'3", 320-pound giant. He's nicknamed the Monster. Monster. The Monster. I think he's from Australia, actually. but get this.
Yeah.
People are saying that they think he's going to break the combine record of bench press reps, which we are not doing today, but
no. The
record is 56 repetitions of, I can't remember what the weight is.
It's 225.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
He also wants to show his speed in the 40. He's been clocked, this is unofficial, running a 4.71. That's a 6'3", 320-pound man running 4.71 in the 40-yard dash.
I can't even fathom that amount of weight moving that quickly on legs.
It's a reason to run right there. I think I could run a 4.71 if he was chasing me.
Yeah, you'd probably have to be a little faster than 4.7 to get away from him.
How about you?
All right, here's my five guys. I'm going to agree with you, Marcus Hunt. I love his story. I love his size. Mm-hmm. 6'8", like Pat mentioned.
6'8". Mm-hmm.
Big boy, but he's raw. I want to kind of see what he looks like doing some of the drills. Tyler Eifert. Okay. Another guy that we've mentioned here already, he's a stud. Zach Ertz, we've mentioned him as well. So those two top tight ends I want to kind of keep my eye on.
Okay.
Because I think it's in play. Who knows? Here's another one. Kansas State linebacker Arthur Brown.
Okay.
I've seen his name come up a lot. Don't really know a ton about him, so I think that's the reason why I want to look at him. He's a little small for an inside linebacker, but, you know, who knows what the Falcons defense is going to be looking for as far as linebackers go, mm-hmm. if they're going to be looking at linebackers at all.
Yeah, they only had four or five last year.
Right, exactly. So you got to think that they're going to be looking there. And then my last one is not even a guy that I think the Falcons are remotely considering.
Right.
Because I don't think he'll be there. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be gone. But I just want to see the circus of Manti Te'o. I want to see that press conference.
Uh-oh.
So that's a guy I'm going to keep my eye on, just for the off-field
and
stuff.
And that's I was the there, fascinating part.
Exactly. And we were there 2 years ago when Cam Newton spoke.
Cam Newton, yeah.
And it was a circus.
Oh, good Lord. It was the Cam Newton show. It was like, I remember like hanging around in the lobby just waiting for him to come. Just to
there were even reporters who removed themselves from the cookie tray to go listen to Cam Newton
yeah.
speak.
The year before was Tim Tebow.
Okay.
Yeah. Was it? Yeah, it was the year before. Yeah. That was another big like media event. The circus around him was pretty crazy. So you're right. I think Manti Te'o will generate similar response.
Some of these things that happen at the combine aren't necessarily like the on-field stuff that I want to see. I want to see how he handles
Absolutely.
That. I think it would be interesting to see.
Totally.
All right. Well, we'll check in with you after the combine and after we go play Who's Faster Than a Sundial. And we'll see what the results are, and you know, one of us is going to get the chance to gloat next week.
Yes,
it's probably going to be.
I'm just gonna.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm just gonna, you know.
I'm gonna
see what happens.
I'm gonna give it my all, kids.
Yes,
and
that's. I'm gonna do my best.
Yeah.
God willing.
Yeah.
I'll come out on top.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. Okay. Well, thanks again for joining us for another edition of the FalconCast podcast. Remember to check us out every week on AtlantaFalcons.com. And we will talk to you next week.